good Sunday morning, and welcome to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vedder, and my guest this morning is Christina Stinchcomb. She is the owner-operator of Airy Hill Stables and also a first-time recent author. Good morning, Christina, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. So I want to get right into talking a little bit about Airy Hill Stables, because you were a stable owner prior to being an author, and that actually led into your book that we're going to talk about in just a little while. So exactly what is it that Airy Hill Stables does?
Well, we moved to Airy Hill Stables about 8.5 years ago from Boulder, Colorado, to operate a boarding facility, a small boarding facility. It's about 17 acres. All the horses that we board there are on field board, so rather than keeping them in stalls and turning them out during the day, they live out in the fields. And we do a small handful of lessons, and I do some personal coaching work with people through the equine gestalt coaching method.
When you say boarding, other people rent the space in your house,
essentially,
stable, is that what it is?
Yeah, essentially. So not everyone who owns a horse has a property where they can keep them, and so they board them at different facilities, different stables or barns or, you know, places in the area. And there's quite a few in Chestertown. So ours is a little bit unique that it's all field board. I mean, there are other people that places that are doing all field board, but it's our home. So we live on the property. It's a nice small kind of farm family that we have. Everybody's I would say pretty like-minded in our philosophy and our approach with horses and that sort of thing. So most of the horses there are somewhat retired, live in this kind of luxury
life of leisure. Sounds like the people.
yeah. And it's mostly for people to come and just kind of connect to nature and enjoy being with their horses. And so we're not doing a lot of really high-end fancy things with the horses, but we try to do things that are correct and supporting them physically and emotionally and all those good things. So not just the horses, but the people.
Well, I'm surprised to hear that. I always sort of had the impression that if you owned a horse, you usually had a barn and enough land and area that the horse can run in. I never thought of actually buying a horse and then boarding it somewhere.
Yeah. I wonder what the statistic is. I don't know off the top of my head, but I would say most people don't have their own facility and do board. Yeah, especially in more urban and suburban areas.
So when the horse stays by you, obviously they're 24/7, and you're responsible for feeding, cleaning up, grooming, exercising, the whole bit?
So for the most part, we're responsible for giving them a safe and enjoyable space that they can live and be a horse. There are people, we have a bit of a mix of horses who are retired, and maybe their owners are off-site and they don't come around as often. And then there's a few other boarders that are local that come regularly. So it's a little bit of a mix. So we take responsibility for a few horses whose owners are off-site, that we do more of the hands-on grooming and managing their care. But then other people come in and they do that for their own horses.
And then you said something about lessons too. So I'm assuming you own a few horses as well yourself.
Yeah, we have a couple. I have three at the moment. We've had as many as six over the years that we've done lessons with. And we're doing less of those these days, but I do lessons with some of our boarders who are riding, and with a handful of people in the community. We're doing workshops and other types of non-riding activities that we've shifted our focus a little bit more towards those things.
So if somebody has, say, for example, a child that they want to teach how to ride, they would approach you for something like that?
Yeah, they could, and I do a couple of those, but there's a point where I would say, you know, go call so-and-so, and, you know, so
that's not your mainstay.
It's not. It's fun, and I enjoy doing that on occasion, and I did a lot more of it earlier on, but it takes a special person and a special horse, and so if you find somebody who's really good at that, that's fantastic.
Okay, so one of the One of the things I always think about is that I know nothing about horses. I never knew anything about horses, and I still don't know anything about horses. In fact, the only time I ever rode on a horse, I think I was 8 years old, and I was sitting on a pony, and somebody was walking around a little ring with a rope on the horse, and that's the extent of it. That's as far as I went.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, you know a little bit more about that than I do. So, where did you get your education from on horses?
Well, I started riding when I was 9 years old. I lived in New Hampshire, and I was thinking about trying to remember, like, what led up to that. And, you know, I honestly don't really have a specific recollection other than I just wanted to start riding horses. And there was a great barn nearby and good instructors. And shortly after riding, my instructor said, you know, I know this family that has a pony who is a great pony. Actually, Chincoteague pony, so originally from, you know, from Chincoteague. But this was up in, they were in Maine, actually. And they said, you know, you might want to see about if they'll, you know, lend you their pony for a little while, because she's got some good years left in her life, but their daughter outgrew her. And so I was really lucky and got to have this pony. Her name was Pennywise in my life.
Pennywise?
For a while.
Ooh.
Yeah, Pennywise.
Was it owned by Stephen Stephen King?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
Well,
so,
you did mention Maine, so I was starting to put it together.
Yeah. So I had a few years where I rode quite a bit and did some shows with the pony, and then I also outgrew her. My parents divorced, and we moved, and I ended up going to boarding school, and so I had a period of time without horses in my life. I always, when I could, would, you know, take opportunities to go and do some riding or something fun, and knew that eventually I would get back into it at some point. So after college, when I moved out to Colorado, I did buy a house up in the mountains with some land that I eventually got some horses and got back into it after having my kids.
Oh, I see. So did you have a boarding location as well in Colorado?
Well, we just had like 3.5 acres and a small barn, and I had my own horse, and I thought, well, I could help offset some of her expenses if I boarded another horse. And so that's essentially what I did for a long time. So that's kind of how it all started. And then my kids weren't really into the horses.
Oh, they, really?
Yeah, no. But my neighbor had a daughter who asked me if I would teach her how to ride. And so that was really the start of my teaching, and then I did end up getting a second horse of my own that I could take people out on rides, because where we lived in the mountains, it was just gorgeous. We could go right off our property, right over our neighbors who had the daughter who I was teaching riding, out onto the National Forest land. Oh. Where there were beautiful trails, and so I would take people, friends mostly, on these trail rides, and it truly was therapy, therapeutic. I actually had therapists.
Slowly a little foreshadowing of what we're going to be talking about.
Right. Is that really all about just mental health, emotional health, spiritual, you know, that sort of thing? So even though, you know, wanting to have horses who were, you know, nice and well-trained and people who knew how to ride, you know, with some skills and some kindness and all those good things. So it was kind of a blend of all of that. But truly, it was about being out in nature, mm-hmm. you know, leaving the hubbub of the day-to-day. And so that's really also what, coming back to your question about Airy Hill Stables, is that was part of our vision there, was to create a place where people could come and connect to nature and be with the horses and have that kind of reprieve from our crazy lives that we live in this world these days.
Yeah, well, fortunately, in this particular area, Kent County at least, the lives aren't that crazy.
That's true.
Yeah,
So
when you moved from Colorado and you came to here, you purchased this place with the intention of starting this boarding location.
Right. We were looking at property around Colorado for a long time, and couldn't find, you know, much. Colorado's gotten very developed and prices were, you know, high. And so we expanded our search. And my husband, Bart, is from Annapolis originally. And so,
so we knew
the Eastern Shore mostly from going to Ocean City or Rehoboth. We didn't really know Chestertown very much. And so when we started to expand our search, and this was through Realtor.com mostly, you know, going in and plugging in our parameters of what we were looking for, we said, well, let's look for something around Annapolis. And this farm, Mary Hale Stables, came up on our search, and I was just amazed at the fact that that was in our price range and all the things it had. You know, I think it needed a very particular buyer, and we fit that perfectly. And so we were like, well, what's Chestertown? And we started to do a little bit of research, and we were like, wow, sounds pretty amazing. Let's go check it out. So we flew out. It was May of 2014, and here we are.
Yeah, wow. So all right, so that was already an established location there. So you didn't really have to do anything to it.
All the buildings were there. There's a beautiful barn. There's an indoor riding arena, which to any horse person, it's a dream. there were the fields and the sheds, the outbuildings for the horses, the house, which was, you know, great. It wasn't too little. It wasn't too big. And, you know, so it was like, you know, the right fit.
All right. We're going to take a short break right now. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
Prince Limousine is the area's premier service for all your transportation needs. Since 1994, they've provided prompt and professional service for all your live events. They can provide transportation for weddings, bachelor and bachelorette parties, birthdays, company events, event shuttle service, and airport and cruise terminal transportation. You just plan your event and leave the driving to Prince Limousine. Family owned and operated, call them at 410-778-4860 or visit PrinceLimoMD.com. Ride like royalty with Prince Limousine.
Prince Limousine, celebrating 30 years in business.
When it comes to disease prevention, immunizations are key. Getting vaccinated protects you and those around you. Chester River Pharmacy offers a wide range of vaccinations, including flu vaccines, measles vaccine, shingles vaccine, and COVID-19 vaccines. Our highly qualified staff can administer vaccines right here in the pharmacy. We offer convenient hours, so you can easily keep up to date on your immunizations. Call us today at 410-810-3600 and schedule your appointment today.
Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vedder. My guest this morning is Christine Stincombe, and Christine is the owner-operator of Airy Hill Stables and also an author. And in the first section, we were talking a lot about the Airy Hill Stables itself and your background and what kind of led you into coming here and opening up the stable here. Now I want to talk a little bit about some of the techniques of riding and then sort of work our way into your book, which I have read and I have in front of me right now. So anyway, the techniques of riding are what sort of fascinate me, because I don't know anything about riding a horse. However, after reading your book, I got the feeling that I maybe understand it at least a little bit, because I'm a motorcycle rider, and I've talked to other motorcycle riders on this program before, and we all sort of say the same thing, where you feel like you're very present in the moment. And I know that you talked about that, being very present in the moment and almost being one with the horse. And so I wanted to talk about some of the techniques. And I noticed one of the things, you even mentioned it in the first section, where you talk about gentleness to the horse. And I remember reading something many, many years ago about, you can always tell about a people's society about the way they treat their animals. And that includes not only pets that they have, but work animals, and even animals that are ultimately processed for food. And I know you mentioned the word kindness and gentleness with it, and I sometimes see, when I watch TV shows where people really kind of like grind spurs into a horse or really whack a horse with a rein, and I always wonder, is that really necessary to do, or will this horse more respond to kindness rather than fear? And I want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that a lot of people who are new to horses don't, and even people who aren't new to horses, don't necessarily always understand is that they're prey animals, and we're, you know, we're predators, and so they're going to be very different when they feel safe and when they don't feel safe. And so a lot of the, let's just say, old school approach is more of a fear-based, dominance-based methodology that is pretty widespread. There's also a lot of people doing a lot of great things and have been since the beginning of time. But for the most part, where I came from, as far as my background with horses, was more from that angle of, you know, the show 'em who's boss and all that kind of stuff. And so over, it's been my journey with the horses is being more authentic with what feels true to me and honoring the horses as pretty amazing sentient beings that we love, and we don't necessarily want to be, you know, jabbing their sides with spurs or even just kicking, and you know, and because, you know, we do it because we want to enjoy it, and we do it for sport, and we do it for competition, and we do it for livelihood, lots of different reasons that horses have been, people, you know, humans have been engaging with horses over the, you know, thousands of years for lots of different reasons. But as far as recreational engaging with horses, and now there's really a whole spectrum of not just recreation, but partnering with horses for psychotherapy work, for other kinds of coaching, personal growth and learning. So that's helped create a bit of a shift of understanding that the horses actually have so much that they can teach us if we are open and willing to learn and wanting to take a look at ourselves, not just think about how we can dominate or control or, you know, do something with the animal, but to see them more as, you know, pretty amazing sentient beings that have a lot to teach us. And so...
I find it interesting that you refer to them as a prey animal, because they're so big. I wouldn't have ever thought of them as such, but I guess it makes sense, because humans are the ultimate predator on the planet, and we go after everything.
Yeah.
And horses are no different.
They're really designed to sense their environment and sense whether they're safe or not, and if they don't feel safe, they're flight animals. They'll run. If they can't run, they'll fight, they'll kick or bite, or, you know, do other those sort of things. They'll freeze, they'll do things like that. So, you know, there aren't a lot of natural predators here up for the horses, but that's from their, you know,
original thousands of years of DNA.
Exactly. So yeah, they're prey animals, they're herd animals. They're pretty remarkable in their systems with each other in terms of being cooperative in nature with the herd. It's not always just a hierarchical dynamic, but they support each other in ways. So they have a lot that they can teach us about being a good leader, about building trust, and having good boundaries. So those sort of things. It's important that we keep ourselves safe, because they are big, strong, powerful animals. So a little healthy dose of caution, and, you know, for people who could just show up and go, yeah, I'm not afraid of them at all. You know, it's like, okay, well, you know, you know, make sure you're, you know, still paying attention to the fact that this is a large animal and they could inadvertently hurt you or intentionally, but that's not, you know,
even falling
rarely.
Off.
Well, yes, even falling off for sure.
Yeah, so are horses social animals?
Yes, horses are super, they are herd animals, so they are social, and they all have their own personalities, so kind of just like people, some are more extroverted and some are more introverted, but yeah, they are social. I think if they didn't want to engage with people, we wouldn't have horses in our world the way we do today.
So I would imagine, though, a natural predilection of a horse would be to be afraid of a human as a human approached. So it has to take some overcoming of that fear in order to be able to get that horse to be able to ride it. So, and I guess that's where the theory comes in, whether you dominate it or whether you treat it with care and kindness and respect. I even know I have dogs, so I understand a little bit about training dogs, and there's always that sort of theory as well with training a dog, whether you dominate that dog and show him who's boss or whether you treat that dog with kindness. And I always find that, I think that animals react more to kindness than they do to fear. Yes, they will react to fear, just as people do. Uh-huh. I mean, there I know people that treat other people that way as well, too. People will respond immediately to fear, but long-term, does the fear work?
I think what horses respond to is somebody who's being authentic and congruent and doesn't have an agenda that's, you know, where they're, you know, in a state of being that is they'll sense that and they'll feel like, oh, I don't know what's going on. I'm not sure about that. And if some, you know, so that's where, you know, the impetus for the riding with the chakras is, you know, what I have learned over the last, you know, 20 plus years about being a better horse person is about being more present and authentic and congruent and not having an agenda, just being in the moment. Those are some of the beautiful lessons that horses can help us learn.
Mm. Well, the one thing that's excellent is that you're obviously not using these horses for work. They're not plowing. They're not hauling around anything for you. They're really mostly for riding and for pleasure. So it is more of being out in the open and enjoying nature. And there's usually I would imagine when you're riding, there's no agenda to get someplace from point A to point B in a hurry. You know, it's when you get there sort of a thing.
Well, you know, we could say it's for our pleasure. It's our agenda is to go out and enjoy the ride. And when you have a horse that enjoys that, too, that's the best. But not all horses enjoy that, either. You know, some horses enjoy the competition and the, you know, just like, you know, somebody who's an athlete that likes to, you know, run track or likes to, you know, do ballet or, you know, that sort of thing. And you know, I think, you know, horses left to their druthers, it all depends on the breed. But what I was going to say was, you know, they might just, if they had their pleasure, maybe they just want to hang out in the field with their friends and eat grass. So we're still asking them to do things with us. And so when we have a horse who enjoys our company and really wants to be with us and is happy in their job and feels probably that they're being honored and, you know, heard and seen and listened to and all those good things, just like with people. So, yeah.
But now you mentioned racehorses. It brings to mind, do these horses like the racing? Do you know if they like it or not? Or are they being pushed to something, to do something that they really don't want to do, but they're good at it, so they're forced to do it?
It's a great question. And, you know, I think some horses love it. But, you know, maybe not all the time. Maybe not on everyone's schedule. Maybe they don't all love it. So probably on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, because we're right around the corner from the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness and all the other good things that happen.
A lot of that in this area. A lot of breeding and a lot of thoroughbreds.
So that's not something you would ever...
standardbreds and other... Yeah,
you would never do that on the area stables, is actually breeding and raising horses.
We have a lot of rescues. We have a lot of rescue horses. Okay. So, you know, not that we don't have purebred dog. So, I do like to, you know, the rescue horses. That's kind of been my thing. And a lot of the horses that we have at Airy Hill Stables are rescues.
Okay. Well, that I like was the dogs. I've always had a rescue dog. So I think that's a great way to go.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a short break again. First, I'd like to thank my sponsors, Heron Point, Chester River Pharmacy, Compass Regional Hospice, and Prince Limousine. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
At Compass Regional Hospice, we understand that a serious illness diagnosis affects all aspects of life for both the patient and the caregiver. Our comprehensive team approach to in-home care adds provides the support you need to maintain the highest quality of life. If you're struggling to find the balance of medical and emotional support, let our care system of nurses, social workers, and volunteers work for you. Call 443-262-4100 to see how Compass Regional Hospice can bring comfort and compassion to your family.
Prince Limousine is the area's premier service for all your transportation needs. Since 1994, they've provided prompt and professional service for all your live events. They can provide transportation for weddings, bachelor and bachelorette parties, birthdays, company events, event shuttle service, and airport and cruise terminal transportation. You just plan your event and leave the driving to Prince Limousine. Family owned and operated, call them at 410-778-4860 or visit PrinceLimoMD.com. Ride like royalty with Prince Limousine.
Prince Limousine celebrating 30 years in business. Chester River Pharmacy is your hometown pharmacy. When you walk through the door, you're greeted by a team of professionals who will offer sound medical advice for all your health concerns. They offer professional-grade multivitamins, nutritional supplements, and prescriptions and medical supplies. Plus, all insurances are accepted. Chester River Pharmacy, where your health comes first. Visit us online at chesterriverpharmacy.com or call us at 410-810-3600.
Mostly sunny, breezy for today with a high temperature near 75. Some scattered showers tonight, breezy 60. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a high 75 to 80 and more sunshine, low to mid 70s on Tuesday. Rain showers return Wednesday. From the Maryland Weather Center, this is meteorologist Bill Jackman. Details on the WCTR forecast as well as local news and community events online at WCTR.com, serving Kent and Queen Anne's counties for 60 years and counting.
Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter. My guest this morning is Christina Stinchcomb, who is the owner-operator of Airy Hill Stables and author of the book we are going to start talking about right now, which is Riding with Chakras. Now, this was recently released, right?
Yeah, it came out in September.
Okay. And I've read the book. I found it very interesting. You did a great job of writing, by the way. I really enjoyed it. I thought it flowed really well. I, for one, don't know about riding horses, and I didn't know much about chakras either. So it was all new to me, but I found it very well written so that it flowed along well, and I understood exactly where you were coming from. And I think as an author, that's a good thing to do, because that's what you want your readers to be able to feel. So let's start talking about what was the genesis of this book.
Well, thank you for those kind words. That was nice. I didn't set out to write a book necessarily. What happened was I had truly an epiphany, a revelation of I've known about chakras for a long time. I've been a horse person for a long time, and I had never actually seen that somebody had put those two together when it dawned on me one day that I was actually using my chakras when I was riding. Stories in the book, but I was working with a friend of mine who had her horses boarded at Airy Hill Stables, and we had been doing lessons together for a long time, and she was a good rider, and a lot of what she was doing mechanically with her horse was correct, and I wanted to see, all right, what is different about when I do this versus she does relatively the same thing. So it was a moment of some deep introspection to really look at everything that I was doing from the moment I, you know, took the reins of the horse, got on, got myself in the saddle, started walking. And as I was in this space of being really present and being really aware of my own body and my energy and my thoughts and all of these things, I after a few minutes of going and having the horse being really responsive to me, and another kind of awareness in my body that we'll talk about in a minute here has to do with that brachial chakra, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm using all my chakras when I'm riding. Why isn't this a thing? Why haven't I heard about this before? Because I thought if somebody else had already been talking about it, I would have known, because it's very much in my, you know, my world. So I Googled to see what might be out there, and there was one person who had written a couple of articles in a horse publication about chakras and the dressage training pyramid. But it was different from what I had already in my mind, because once I had that awareness, it was kind of like this giant download of information of like, all right, I know it's a soul system. This makes so much sense. I want to put it out there. I want to, you know, do workshops. And I didn't necessarily think, oh, I'll do a book, but that was what ended up coming into, you know, into reality.
But you had to have, in order to write about the riding with chakras, you had to have an understanding of chakras to begin with. And I would imagine that a lot of people don't necessarily have that understanding, and they may be great riders, mm-hmm. and may not even realize that mm-hmm. it has a connection with it. So where did you get your training about chakras?
Yeah, a lot of people don't, and chakras are kind of in that category of more of like metaphysical woo-woo for a lot of people who think that, oh, chakras, because they've been very oversimplified, and unless you're into yoga, Reiki, meditation, that kind of thing, you probably wouldn't have otherwise heard about the chakras. So I, back in the early 2000, well, the first decade, what do we call those, the aughts, became a Reiki master.
Oh, you did, okay.
And then...
So you went through some training for that.
Yeah, Reiki training is not super in-depth. You can do, you know, you can get your level one in a day, level two in another day, that kind of thing. So it's what I believe sets my book apart from most other books about chakras is that I'm looking at it more through the lens of our psyche and our own personal empowerment, our own self-knowledge, those sort of things that I believe are what help us have the ability to connect with our horses. So the basic underlying premise is if you want to have a connection with your horse, you have to first have a connection with yourself. And so how do we get connected to ourselves? And I think the chakras offer a really nice roadmap to do that. There's 7 chakras in the traditional chakra system. Other systems have more. I've added an extra 8th chakra that...
which we were going to talk about, because it confused me a little bit, because you did mention 7 chakras, and however you have 8 listed in there,
mm-hmm.
but what you also have is the chakras that are coordinated with colors of the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
And it starts at the root chakra, the bottom, and works its way to the top, and it's in the correct order of the spectrum. But there was one chakra that didn't really have color, and it was sort of out there on its own.
So from my understanding, the colors of the rainbows were sort of ascribed to the chakras when they became popular in the U.S. around the 70s, during that kind of New Age movement.
So that wasn't anything traditionally, if you go back centuries.
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I believe from what I've read is that it's more of a modern association. So and I feel like it's part of what makes people maybe think it's woo-woo or skeptical, or just kind of go, yeah, I don't have these, you know, red balls in my body. Like, what is that? I don't know. That's some kind of, you know, woo-woo. However, it makes sense to me when we think about it as far as... frequency of energy, red being the slower frequency, and as we go up to the purple at the crown chakra, it's a higher frequency. And you know, the visible light spectrum is less than 1% of the our light spectrum. And so, you know, there's this idea that there's so much more out there that we don't We just because we don't see it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And so that's one of the things with chakras. We don't see them. Some people see them. People who see energy and see auras can see them. People can use, dowsing pendulums or other things to, let's see, a lot of Reiki practitioners do that just to help people see, are your chakras, aligned? Are they balanced? Are they open? Or, that sort of thing. But for me, what I love about the chakras is that idea that it helps us understand ourselves on a deeper level. But I'd say the most important thing is to help us understand that, like, we're energy. We're powerful energy beings, and there's so much to the unspoken. The things that horses are so good at picking up on because they're prey animals, right? They sense the energy and the vibration and whether something is congruent or something is, is it safe or is there something else? And, I think as humans, we have that ability, but it's been shut down for the most part for, kids have it. And then they're, when they have an imaginary friend or something, they're told, no, you don't. And, unless they have parents that embrace that, but that's pretty unusual. So it's just the idea that there's a lot more out there that just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
So I know we don't have enough time this morning to talk about all these different chakras in depth, but is there a sort of a generic way you can talk about to describe what a chakra is? For example, unless you read the book, you really won't understand what it is. I'm talking to most of the listeners right now that maybe hear the word chakra and say, I don't quite understand what it means. I know that you have there's different chakras. There's root chakras, solar plexus, heart, crown, throat. There are a number of different chakras that are in there, but is there something easy and generic you can describe it with?
So one easy generic way of describing a chakra is to say that they're subtle energy centers in the body. I've recently decided I like to explain them as it's where universal energy meets our physical anatomy and at these different hubs and centers throughout the body that do correspond, that do correlate to our physical body. It's complicated. It's kind of complex. There's a lot. It's hard to be concise here in just a couple of minutes. But if more people are familiar with traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture, meridians that flow through the body. So if we think of that the chakras come from ancient India, think of the 4,000 years ago or more, people doing yoga and meditating and feeling the natural energies from the earth and from the cosmos and having it flow through their body because they're breathing and they're in yogic practice, and they would use chakras as meditations during these during that practice. And so it grew from there. It's stuck around for the thousands of years, and then I'd say in the last 40-50 years had a bit of a resurgence coming into the modern day world along with yogurt.
Definitely
yoga.
Yoga and yogurt. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. It seems that there has been a definite resurgence in yoga, which we can attest to because both of us attended a yoga class prior to this interview, and there is definitely a resurgence with it. So I imagine the chakras are all part and parcel of that whole package. All right, we're going to have to take a short break again. You listen to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
When it comes to disease prevention, immunizations are key. Getting vaccinated protects you and those around you. Chester River Pharmacy offers a wide range of vaccinations, including flu vaccines, measles vaccine, shingles vaccine, and COVID-19 vaccines. Our highly qualified staff can administer vaccines right here in the pharmacy. We offer convenient hours, so you can easily keep up to date on your immunizations. Call us today at 410-810-3600 and schedule your appointment today.
And here in
southern point of Chestertown, living Riverside isn't the most alluring aspect of your retirement lifestyle. It's the security you get with Axe Life Care. Having the retirement you always planned for. Take off for new adventures, meet fascinating residents, and find out how much easier, more enjoyable, and more secure life can be. Your long-term care is prearranged and guaranteed. Your nest egg is protected. Discover retirement living at Heron Point. Call us to learn more, 877-380-1360, or visit axheronpoint.org.
Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter. My guest this morning is Christina Stinchcomb, owner, operator of Airy Hill Stables, and author of Riding with Chakras. Now, we've been talking a lot about the book in the last section of the show, and I want to continue talking about that because I love the whole thought about chakras and how they sort of intermingle with each other. I mean, I reading the book, I see that the chakras are correlated with areas of the body, and also what's being done in that area of the body. For example, the heart chakra, obviously that's where the heart is. The crown chakra is where the brain is. The third eye chakra is what you see and feel. So they all do coordinate to certain areas. And I'm curious, do horses, or any animal for that matter, have exactly the same areas of chakras, or do they have different areas of the bodies or different types of chakras?
So I'd say that any living creature has chakras. With the horses and humans are, if you look at like our skeletal anatomy and a lot of it, they're not that different. There's a lot of parallels and, you know, similarities. So of course they're different, but there's a lot of, when you look at the, you know, the individual bones and the number, you know, how, anyway. So animals, yeah, they do have chakras. I think the biggest difference is, you know, we've got this cerebral brain that does so much of our thinking and analyzing, and that other animals are operating out of a system that's much more innate and based on their, you know, a different kind of a nervous system and brain function. But that energetically there's a lot of similarities, and that, so for example, the root chakra at the base of the spine that corresponds to our feeling of safety and security. I believe that's the same for other animals. Mm-hmm. And as it goes up the spine, up to the top of our head or the animal's head, there's fairly standard similarities, I would say. I haven't studied a ton of chakras of other animals, but I've seen horses working with chakras with people, helping them balance their own chakras, bringing attention to different parts of a person's body where they may have some issues that directly correspond and relate to the characteristics and qualities and things that relate to those chakras, to say, hey, here's where maybe you're shut down, or here's where maybe there's a block, or here's where maybe you need to get in touch with something that's a little bit deeper. And there's a lot that innately corresponds to the chakras with that understanding with the animals.
I would imagine if you're riding a horse on a pretty regular basis, you get to know the horse quite well, and similarly, the horse gets to know the rider as well, too. And I would imagine there has to be a strong bond of trust between the two. I imagine the horse is trusting that the rider is not going to harm the horse or bring the horse into some sort of a dangerous situation, and the rider is trusting that the horse isn't going to toss him over the side of a cliff somewhere, or just even on the ground, or stomp on him. So there's got to be a bond of trust between the two of them. And I guess the more you ride a horse, I guess the more you understand the horse, the more the horse understands you, and that little movements that you make that knows right away that you want to go to the left as opposed to wanting to go to the right, and whereas somebody else would have to tell that horse almost directly, pull it to the left to get it to go that way. However, the rider that it knows may have its own little idiosyncrasies that it works on.
Well, yeah, I mean, ideally, that's what we strive for, is to have that trust and to feel safe with our horses and have our horses feel safe with us. But, you know, the reality is that that's not always the case. And so, you know, oh, you just said so many good things, and I just lost my train of thought because there are so many different things I wanted to answer there at those moments. But, yeah, so we...
I talked about the bond of trust between the animal and the person.
Also. Yeah, yeah, and that's something that, you know, takes time for a lot of people to build with their horses. You know, a good horse person who can come, you know, who's you know, set apart from others because they feel safe and they know how to recognize when a horse doesn't feel safe, and they understand that the horse recognizes when they don't feel safe, and that, you know, that sort of thing is out there. So yeah, I wish we could rewind and back up because I forget what you said.
All right, well, there's more. So
yeah,
we could,
there's a lot more we
can talk about. Yeah, so we can move on from there. You also write a lot about in the moment, being in the moment, living in the moment. And that's this term that I find very fascinating, because as a motorcycle rider, I learned all about what being in the moment is. And I know that most animals sort of live in the moment. They're not worried about what they're going to do next week. They're not worried about what happened yesterday. They're worried about what's going on right now. Are they safe right now? Are they comfortable right now? Are they fed right now? Are they thirsty or not thirsty? They're only worried about what's going on right now. Whereas most people, yeah, they may be thinking about, yeah, I'm thirsty right now, I want to get some of the drink. Yeah, but I also have to do this by tomorrow. And yesterday, oh, that guy said something that really bothered me. So humans really don't live that often in the moment, whereas I think most animals do. However, you wrote in the book about how an ideal ride almost is when you're not only one with the horse, but also living in the moment with that horse that's living in the moment. Does that sound right?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you said it. You know, and when we're doing things like riding and stuff that's new, that we're learning, we're thinking about the mechanics, and we're breaking things down into parts and pieces, and it's, you know, it takes time to get competent, where you can be in the flow, where you can really be in the moment. But that's where you know, the magic happens, when you can just be not having to be mechanical and not having to think about what your, you know, have your brain send a signal to your leg or your arm. Or, oh yeah, I was also going to talk about earlier when I about how we send our horses so many mixed messages all the time, and so the more we can be in the moment and the more we can be present and just be still and be basically in alignment with the moment, with our mind, body, spirit, that connection that we get through practices like working on being still and being present through meditation or yoga or other things like that. That's when you get into that zone and into that flow, or into that, you know, you're talking about your motorcycle, and I'm thinking about, you know, Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
And so it can be Zen and the art of whatever it might be that you're doing, that you love and your passion, because you're in that moment and you're not in that part of your brain where you're analyzing and thinking and being mechanical. You're just in the flow and in the zone and in the moment. And so when you can get to that place with anything, it's amazing. With horses, yeah, you know, because you're dealing with another being, a large animal. You know, an average horse is about 1,000 pounds.
Right,
and,
yeah.
You know, again, they're
appreciably
a flight
large
animal. So, you know, that's just, you know, kind of another level. Of course, with a motorcycle, you've got speed, you've got the physics, and you've got all that other stuff, or like, you know, surfing, or really, but anything, you know, cooking or any kind of a creative activity, anything that you're doing, or even just, you know, life, really, if we can be in that moment and not worry so much about, you know, all these other things that our brain is so busy with. It's very different. So, yeah.
Well, we are all very fortunate living in an area where nature does take precedence. And something that I've noticed and I've mentioned before on the show before is I'm always amazed at how seriously people take the environment here. I've come from New York where nobody gave it a second thought. You ran your car all the time, and if you were cold, you sat in your car for a half hour, 45 minutes, letting it run away, not thinking about what it was doing to the environment. To drink it, all your water out of plastic bottles and just toss them away, never quite thinking about what happens with them at the end of the day. And here, there's an acknowledgement about nature. There's the people talk about water runoff and the fertilizer runoff from the farms, and the farmers are concerned about that, and so many of the farmers are organic farmers as a result from that. So it's an area where the environment takes precedence without question. And I would imagine just riding quietly on a nice warm spring day in the woods by yourself on a horse is got to be very refreshing, and it's got to be very cathartic.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that, really. Yeah, we're so lucky to be in this area that is where we have the connection to nature that so many other people in, you know, first world countries don't have so much, or, you know, not just first world countries, but so yeah, there's a nice mentality to this agricultural area where people are more connected, people are more aware of the wildlife and the environment, and not so, you know, like a lot of other. I think that kids in this area spend a lot less time on let's say more time outdoors, less time on their devices and that kind of thing. So yeah.
All right, we only have a little bit of time left, so I want to push Riding with Chakras. If the listener is interested in getting a hold of it, is there someplace local they can get it, or they have to get it online? How do you get it?
Well, there are a bunch of local places here in town that have it. The Book Plate sells copies. Bart's Record Store has some.
I have seen some there, yes.
Yep. And Twigs has it. Elevate has it. The library has a copy. You can also get it online. You can get it on my website. Come by the farm sometime and say hello to the horses and pick up a copy.
So there's no excuse not to have this book. Well, Christina, thank you so much for being my guest this morning. This was a fascinating talk. Your book is really good. I enjoyed it. I highly encourage everybody to pick up a copy and read it. It's a lot more than just writing. It's a good life lesson as well, too. So great job on that, and thank you again for being here. I'd also like to thank my sponsors, Heron Point, Chester River Pharmacy, Compass Regional Hospice, and Prince Limousine. This is 106.9 WCTR, and if it's Sunday morning, you've been listening to My Generation.